another great day to make a positive impact in somebody's life. This is the Truth Business Network radio program. My name is Chris Roloff, and producing our radio program is Ron Carlson, and Joel Smith is in the studio today. And I tried to do it like you do it, Joel. How do you say it? You say it's a great day. What?
It's a great day to make a difference.
It's a great day to make a difference.
There and you know go. What they say. If you don't make a difference, you make no difference.
There you go. It is a great day to make a difference, and we're so happy that you have joined to listen to this program. We know that you don't have to. We know that it's a choice that you make. So thank you so much for listening to the Truth Business Network radio program. This is the radio program of the Truth Business Network, which is a movement of Christian leaders here in the Des Moines area. Folks that have a passion for a couple of things. One, we recognize that we need God and that we need each other if we're going to be great Christian leaders, and we have a desire to live out our faith with confidence in the marketplace, and so we need each other to do that. We're really two members of a growing movement, and it's cool to see what God is doing through that, and it's cool to hear the success stories, and maybe we'll do another program on some of what God has done through that. But today, Joel, we're going to talk about culture. We're going to talk about workplace culture because it's a big deal. In fact, you and Ron were talking about some of it a little bit before the broadcast. I mean, it's something that is the thing that we deal with a lot. I mean, most of us spend at least 40 hours of our week in our workplace. And so that culture affects us. It affects the other time. Right. It affects the outside time.
It affects everything. You know, most people, when they think of workplace culture, they think that it's something that just is. You choose to be a part of it or you choose not to be a part of it. But people don't think about how you can create a great culture or you can contribute to a great culture or, you know, contribute positively or negatively to a culture. We're going to talk today about the foundations of workplace culture.
Yeah.
I asked my wife last night, I said, hey, we're going to do a radio program tomorrow, and I don't, what should we talk about? And so I asked her, I said, so in the workplace, what can we talk about, you know, in the workplace that make it good? She said, well, why don't you talk about workplace culture? Why don't you talk about employee morale and all that? And so I said, okay, so this is because of my wife.
Hey, all right. She all did right. good.
She did. 55% to 71%, depending on kind of where you look, of workers in the United States are dissatisfied with their job. And it kind of depends on what statistics you look at, but
sure.
either way, it shows that we have a problem.
Yes.
We have a problem. The majority of people in our culture do not like their job. They're dissatisfied. If we look at this problem from a bird's eye view, there's got to be some foundational reasons why that is, and there's got to be some foundational things that we can look at that can significantly help us to increase the morale or the culture in our workplace as
right.
well. So if you imagine a scale, maybe it's a scale from 1 to 10, top to bottom, whatever it might be, and you look at the very top, you've got maybe a workplace that I'll describe as like a visional quest place to work.
Okay.
A place of vision, and they have a quest. They're driven for a greater cause, or a cause bigger than themselves, and the people that work there are doing the best that they can, and they're working hard because they believe in whatever the cause is. Maybe it's a great mission that the company stands for. Maybe it's a great company values, and the people buy into that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you got maybe the middle of the scale, and that is more of kind of a contractual quest. So you got people that it's more of a simple exchange of services. I'll give you this, and you give me that. And so people do what's expected, nothing more, nothing less. They're not necessarily particularly excited about what they're doing, but they also don't hate their job either.
Is that kind of like working for a paycheck?
Yeah.
I mean, is that...
Yeah,
that
it's a paycheck.
It's a job.
Yeah, yep. And then you look at the bottom of the scale, and this is more like a survival quest. This is, you know, it's burdensome and painful. You know, maybe it's people that hate their jobs, but they do it because they have to have a paycheck and they can't find a better option, whatever it might be. And these people, because of the, maybe it's a low culture, it's a poor culture, maybe it's just a bad place to work. And so people do as little as they can get away with.
Right.
And that actually contributes to the culture, of course. And you get
right.
everybody kind of contributing to a negative culture. It spirals downhill. It doesn't just get better because people are going to react to the culture in a negative way.
Yeah.
So there's something intentional that needs to happen in order to turn that around to have to move up that scale, basically. So
I think that I can, you know, I'm not super old, but I've worked in environments where I've experienced probably all of those with the exception of the top one. I don't know that I've ever worked in that kind of an environment where everybody was just on vision, on excited. Everybody was on fire for what they were doing.
Yeah, and you keep in mind, that's kind of an ideal situation. That's at the very top of the scale. Very few people probably work in a place to that extreme, but I think they exist.
Okay, awesome.
You know, but every workplace falls in this scale someplace. You know, a lot of them are going to maybe tend to be in the middle in a lot of areas, but maybe in some areas they kind of excel, or some areas are kind of poor. And as I look at my company, so I have eight stores, eight Papa Murphy's restaurants, and my stores will kind of fall into those different areas. I have stores at times maybe struggle more than others, and they might have other stores that kind of excel, and they've got a really great culture, and they're moving up that, you know, in the top half. I think we can be different places at different times.
Well, what's the difference then between those different stores?
Yeah, well, that's what we're going to talk about today. So I've got something I want to talk about. It's called the 3 C's to workplace culture.
Okay.
The 3 C's. This is foundational. So this is, when you're looking at workplace culture here, what we're not talking about, we're not talking about putting in fuzzy employee incentive plans. We're not talking about
table in the break room.
Yeah, right, or donuts every day. And just, we're not talking about that, or parties scheduled all the time for different events. What we're talking about are foundational principles that we can put in the place that make the real difference,
right,
of what that culture is like. Not just kind of temporary differences, but more permanent differences, foundational differences that set the stage for everything else.
Yeah.
So the first C to workplace culture is commitment. So when you think about commitment, you know, commitment is when you're focused on one thing and you block out all other outcomes. You're focused on it. You're committed to something. It's more of a covenant than it is a contract in a lot of ways. So you're committed to it. You decide, yes, I'm going to give my all to this. Now, commitments don't always mean like you're committing forever. I don't expect people to come into my workplace and commit, I'm going to work for you for life. That's my commitment. I don't ever expect that. You can work for me for 6 months or 6 years. The commitment that I want from people are, just give me your best. Give me your best and help us with our vision. Contribute to the vision. So the commitment level is more of a buy-in level.
Yeah, it sounds like it is. You used a couple of key words there. You used the word focus, and you used the word covenant rather than a contract. Those are the things that stuck out to me. And when you think of focus, and you and I have talked about this before, sometimes even in the process of a task or in an activity, sometimes you really have to focus in on that.
Right.
And that is buy-in. You know, I'm going to do this thing right now. I'm really focused in on it. I'm going to put blinders on. I'm going to protect it. This is what I'm doing for this time. And you alluded to it there right at the end. That doesn't mean I'm going to be doing this task forever, right? I mean, if you're a guy that likes working with wood in your shed, you go out to your shed and you're doing a work project there and you're working on the wood. It doesn't mean you're going to be doing that project forever, but during that time you're pretty focused.
Yeah, and you got to get it done.
And you got to get it done.
So you work hard for that period of time. You compartmentalize and you give yourself a time goal. Figure out what it is. Whatever the case is, you commit to what you're doing. You give it your best and you do it. And so you're committing to a specific set of results. You're committing to people.
Right.
You're making commitments. Ken Blanchard has a great quote. He says, when you're interested in something, you'll do it when it's convenient. When you're committed to something, you'll accept no excuses, but only results. I think that is awesome.
That is. Say that again for me, because I'm slow.
So when you're interested in something, you'll do it when it's convenient. When you're committed to something, you'll accept no excuses, but only results. I think commitment is the deal breaker in so many cases. A lot of people in the workplace are committed to what they're doing. They come in and they're committed to an outcome. They just decide what they want to be or what the outcome wants to be, and they're just committed to it. They're all in. Have you ever watched like SportsCenter on ESPN and maybe the interview a brand new head coach for the NFL?
Yeah, sure.
And so they're interviewing this new coach, and they're asking the coach, "Hey, what do you want to accomplish while you on your new team?" None of them will ever say, "Well, I hope to just win as many games as I lose." No, they don't say that because that's a lack of commitment. There's,
right.
Who would hire somebody that's half committed?
Right.
They all say the same thing. Well, we want to win a championship. And we're going to do whatever we need to do in order to get there. We're going to get the right people. We're going to set the right standards. We're going to work as hard as we need to in order to accomplish what we need to accomplish.
You know, there's something profound about that, though, too. As I'm meditating on that a little bit, you know, the focus on results, and that's really true. You know, when you talked about this scale earlier between a workplace culture that is at a one, where it's just a pain and it's suffering, and you're there just because you have to work and you've got to get a paycheck and you're just waiting for the day to be over, versus the 10, where you're looking forward to it and you're really excited, and then the middle, where it's that 50-50. You know, you're working, but you're not giving 100%. You're just kind of getting it done. It's not terrible, but you're not really excited about it. Only one of those three will you ever be focused on results.
That's right.
Only at the top of that list are you going to be focused on the results. You're driven by the result that you're going to get. And that's true in our personal lives. If we want something and we want to get a result from it, whatever that result is, we're going to get there. We don't accept excuses. We don't accept excuses from ourselves. We don't accept excuses from other people. We're not distracted by those things. When we have buy-in, when we have real commitment, then the results are the things that drive us.
Yeah.
And then it's not about work. It's not about hours. You know, that's where I'm sure the adage comes from, you know, it's not work if you love what you're doing.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. Well, that statistic I said at the very beginning, that somewhere between 55 and 71% of people are dissatisfied with their job. I would suggest that the people that are satisfied with the job are the ones that are committed.
Sure.
I think there's a correlation to that. When you're committed to something and you're working on it and you're accomplishing something and you've got other people around you that are buying into the same vision that you're buying into, that's a great thing. That's what we're made to do.
Right.
And so when we're doing what we're made to do with other people that are doing what they're made to do, we are in the sweet spot. And we're doing what we love, and we're experiencing the joy that comes from doing what we love.
Right.
When we're outside of that circle and we're misplaced or we're not committed or whatever the case is, that is truly what leads to dissatisfaction more than anything else, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, because that's not a joy to work just to get a paycheck,
right,
just to kind of come in, do your job, and leave.
Yeah.
This is not a lot of joy. And that's going to be different. Work is different for different people. People work and enjoy different aspects of their job. They enjoy different projects, different work environments. And so, obviously, this has to be internalized. You have to say, well, I really like work, Chris. You may be lazy and do nothing, but I like work. And that's true. You do. We like working. But we like working when we see the result. Everybody loves the result. I mean, how many of us go through even just a project list, a task list, and at the end of the day, we can say, hey, look, I got all that done. And that the satisfaction of results is something that drives us, and it should be driving us. And the more that we think about that, the more I think maybe we're committed. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Nobody ever really accomplished anything great or reached a high level of success by being uncommitted.
Mm.
Nobody. Think about how many obstacles there are that stand in the way of people that accomplish great things. Whether you're Abraham Lincoln and you lose a whole bunch of elections on the way to becoming president, or if you're Thomas Edison, you fail so many times over and over at trying to invent something like the light bulb or other things, great things that he invented. He was driven and he was committed to a result, and he wouldn't stop until he got there. Or think about all the different diseases that people have found cures for in our world that just worked relentlessly over and over and tirelessly just to solve this problem because there was something that was driving them. Maybe it was just their compassion for people or whatever it is that drives people to have a mission that they're committed to solve a problem. It's amazing that what commitment does, and it's also amazing what the lack of commitment will do.
You know, here's something that I'm going to take. By the way, the voice you're hearing there is Joel Smith. I'm Chris Roloff. This is the Truth Business Network here on 99.3 FM. And we're talking about workplace culture. We're talking about the three C's of workplace culture, commitment, and the other two I won't give away. You're going to have to stick with us. But we're talking about commitment right now as the first C. And here's one of the things I heard you say, because the Edison thing comes up all the time. People refer to Edison like, you know, all the time.
Sure.
He tried so many times, 355 billion times he tried to make the light bulb. And then finally one time he was just sleeping and he woke up and boom, no, that's not even what happened. But we hear this story over and over again, so it kind of seems dead to us at times. But most of the time I hear it, Joel, I hear it posited kind of the opposite of what you said, which is that the focus was on all the times he failed. And here's the thing about that, is that may be motivating to some people, but that's not motivating to me. I have a personality, and this is I'm internalizing here, but I'm a pessimist. So failure is kind of like getting up in the morning.
It's something to avoid.
It's something to avoid, because if I don't avoid it, I'm going to sink.
Right.
I mean, I wake up in the morning and go, well, here's another day to fail. I'm kind of an Eeyore personality. So if you tell me Thomas Edison failed 75 billion times, that doesn't help me.
Right.
That doesn't even connect with my brain.
Right.
Because failure isn't that way for me. But what you said connects with me, because what Thomas Edison did was he was committed to the outcome. I'm going to get to where I want to go. And failure didn't even bother him, because he was committed to where he was going. He knew that he wanted to get a result, and he just kept trucking. That makes sense to me. That's encouraging. This is the Truth Business Network. We're listening to 99.3 FM along with you. We're listening to 99.3 FM. Stick with us. We've got more with Joel Smith when we come back. Welcome back to the Truth Business Network. This is 99.3 FM. My name is Chris Roloff, and in the studio with me is Joel Smith. Our radio program, once again, is being produced by Ron Carlson. You're here, and Joel's here, and we're talking about workplace culture, and we don't mean parties, and we don't mean donuts, and we don't mean, you know, casual Fridays, and
right.
And we're not talking about that, and you know, all the stuff that the HR department cares a lot about. We're not talking about that. We're talking about commitment is what we talked about in the first segment, and what it means to be committed to the vision, to the product, to the project, to the task, to the thing, to your goal, whatever that is, to be committed to that and know that getting results is the thing that's going to drive you. And that's true. And don't let results scare you. That result needs to be your result, or whatever the result of the project is. But commitment to a project will get you the results that you look for, no matter how long it takes, no matter how many times you fail. And we know that to be true, because that's true in the things that we care about most in our life.
That's right.
That's just true about the things we care about most in our life. So having commitment in the workplace, having commitment at your place of work, at your office, at your business, on the job site, wherever it is, having commitment to the project will get you the results that you want. And we talked about this a little bit, Joel. It's a more satisfying work day when we're committed.
Sure.
You know, when we're like, I'm in on this. I'm going to focus on this. This means that I'm not going to be distracted by other things. I'm not just kind of doing it while I'm really thinking about someone else.
Right.
Or something else. You used another word, too, and we don't have a whole heck of a lot of time to talk about this, but I wanted to go back to this. You said in the first segment, too, the difference in commitment is an attitude that sees your work relationship as a covenant rather than a contract.
Right.
And what's interesting about that is, to me, is as a Christian especially, covenants are they're more buy-in. There's a substantial level of buy-in in a covenant.
There's no going back in a covenant.
There's no going back.
A contract, it's I'll do this as long as, and then fill in the blank. And so if the other side doesn't measure up to their side, then we can get out of that contract. A covenant is no matter what. It's I'm going to give my best no matter what it is.
Exactly. And the caveat you made to that is that doesn't mean in the workplace environment, that doesn't mean that you're eternally connected to this job.
Right.
It just means that while you are at this job or at this task or at this project or whatever, that you are focused on it.
Yeah.
That you don't see it as a I'll do this if you do this for me relationship, but you see it as a covenant of your full commitment. And I think those are really, really helpful words. And now what we want to do, Joel, is move on to the next thing, which is contribution then. So if we're committed to our work, if we're committed to our job, and we know that we're going to get the results that we want to get, then we have to do something, I think, is what you're saying.
Yeah, commitment isn't enough. You can't just commit to something. You got to actually do it.
Yeah.
You
see, then you start meddling. This
you
is like
put
when
some
the pastor,
effort into
you know,
it. Yeah.
That's what happens with the preachers. They tell us all these really highfalutin things, and then they say you got to go out and do it, and everybody gets mad.
That's right.
So now you're telling us we got to do something.
So one thing that is kind of a profound thought that's on the surface, some people don't necessarily agree with this, but we will always do what is most important to us. So we'll always do what's most important to us. Now, somebody might be skeptical of that and say, well, wait a minute. I don't think following the speed limit is very important, you know, but I do that anyway. Well, sure, maybe you don't think following the speed limit isn't very important, but you do think not getting a speeding ticket is important.
Or not getting in a car accident.
Yeah.
Right.
And so you're always going to do whatever's important. Your motives might change for that, but that's true. So when it comes to contribution, the amount of effort or our level of contribution is directly proportional to how vested we are in the venture. However important it is to us, that's going to determine the degree of how hard we work at it or what we contribute towards it. You know, and it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a task that you need to accomplish in your workplace or whether it's volunteering in your church or whatever it is, if you believe in it, you're going to give towards it. You know, your friends, for instance, if you truly love your friends and you truly care about your friends and they're important to you and they say, hey, next weekend, can you help me do this? I've got some things I got to move. You're going to just do it and you're going to love doing it. You're going to want to do it. But if those people aren't really very important, you're going to back off. You're going to find excuses. Well, it's the same thing in the workplace. You're either going to give the effort because you believe in the cause and because you're committed to it and because the other people around you, you're committed to the other people around you, or you're going to do something less. But it always comes down to what you believe. And what you believe comes down to choices and thoughts. I mean, that's true, isn't it?
Right, absolutely.
So there is a thought process to that as well.
There is, you know, and the way, you know, it's that it's head trash gets in the way sometimes, you know, or even just what we're thinking about. If commitment is really only there because we went to that manager's meeting on Monday and they got us riled up and we're really fired up and we're like, yeah, we're going to do this thing. And then, like I said, you go back to your office and you go right back to whatever distracting task that you normally do, then you're not putting in the effort and there's something wrong.
Right.
And in other words, there's not real buy-in. There might be emotional infatuation, you're excited right about it for the moment, but real buy-in is going to produce effort, or it should.
Right. Sometimes our contribution is lower than what it should be, not because you're not working hard. Sometimes you're working hard, but that effort is misplaced. So you might be putting a lot of effort into things that don't really move the needle instead of focusing your time on things that do move the needle.
Right.
And we've talked about the Pareto principle or the 80-20 effect in the past, where maybe we spend more time on the bottom 80% of stuff that doesn't move the needle, and we don't spend our time in the top 20% of the things that do move the needle, that really make the difference. And that's a leadership principle. If you're the leader of a company, you've got to figure out what your top 20% of the tasks that you need to do, what those are. Those are, in the leadership world, those are usually people related.
Right.
Taking care of people, inspiring people, creating a vision for the company, connecting with people so that those people can do that, rather than the CEO of a company going down to the bottom level and just kind of doing some of the lower things. And so that's part of contribution as well.
Right.
Being efficient in what we do by prioritizing the effectiveness of each of our tasks.
Right. Yeah, effort is a little bit more, what I'm hearing you say is it's a little bit more complex than just working or just saying, I buy into this, so I'm going to make an effort. There is some thought and some planning that goes into it to say, not just the old, the prioritized list where you put the A, B, C, D, not necessarily just that, although that's definitely part of it, but really saying what's going to be the most efficient use of my time for the result that I want, for the thing that I'm committed to.
Yep.
So it takes the mental and emotional buy-in, but then the physical buy-in of saying this is the most important thing.
Yep.
Because in every job, in every workplace, there's tons of things you can do, you know, and anybody who's a procrastinator knows that if you have a really big project to do, the first thing you got to do is get your desk organized and make sure that you've sharpened all your pencils and make sure that you know where the bathroom is. And those are really important things you got to do before you get the big project done. Never mind. We'll move on.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've heard people talk about how we need to work smarter and not harder. Well, working smarter takes a lot of effort also.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're just working a lot harder with your brain or with your mouth or your ears rather than with your back or your legs or your hands at times, you know? And so it's really important to do that. But there's another principle too, that goes right along with contribution too. And that is kind of the weakest link.
Okay.
So, you're only as strong as the weakest link. Okay. And so if you have a team member that is really struggling, whether they're maybe they struggle with their competence, maybe they're just in over their head, they're in the major leagues and they should be in the minor leagues, or they're in the wrong seat doing a task that they shouldn't be doing. And, and not in the seat that they should be, you know, whatever the case might be. If you have a weakest link, it can take down the whole team, or at least hold back the whole team.
Sure.
And so it's important for a team to contribute that, you know, we get the commitment from everybody, not everybody except for a few.
Right.
You know, and when we get that commitment from everybody and we get the effort and the contribution from everybody, we get people, put them in a position where they can contribute and contribute as effectively as they can, then the whole team can succeed.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that, though, in terms of blaming others, though. You know, you're in a work team with four or five people, and there's somebody that's not pulling your weight. How do you deal with that in a way that's not just building resent and irritation and just pointing the finger and saying, yeah, it's all because Johnny's not doing their job?
Well, that's tricky, of course, and every workplace has that to some degree.
Yeah,
and there are some, there's a lot of finger pointing going on. I think from a leadership perspective, we just need to pay attention, and we need to make awareness be really important. If somebody's pointing a finger, we need to look at that and think, okay, are they pointing a finger because they're making excuses and they don't want to accept responsibility themselves, so they want to push that blame and responsibility onto somebody else? Or, you know, a lot of times how they go about it will make a difference. If somebody's just always making excuses, well, it's their fault, or they didn't leave me with this, or I was supposed to get this from them and they didn't get it to me. So, you know, if they're going about it from an excuse perspective, then that gives you an idea where the problem might be. But if they just come to you and say, hey, I need to sit down, I'm concerned about our team because of this. Here's what's happening. And I'm, you know, if they come at you, you know, it's important for us to listen for those. For those tips, so that we can address it.
And there's a difference. You're describing a difference between somebody that's complaining and pointing fingers and making excuses, and something that is a genuine observation of, hey, individual here is not pulling their weight. And thinking again, if the focus is commitment and effort, then what are the results? What can we do? Is there something we can do to reengage that person or figure out what's going on?
Yeah. So that's a good question. What can we do, or what must we do?
Yeah.
And as a leader, the responsibility is on you to solve that problem. If you've got contributing members of your team that are unsatisfied, or they're dissatisfied with what you're doing with maybe another couple people on the team, that falls on your shoulders. So it is, as a leader, it's our responsibility to take care of that. Now, either we take that person that's not contributing and we teach them how to contribute. Maybe it's just that. They need to learn how to do it so that they can strengthen themselves and become contributors. Or if they refuse to contribute, if it's more of a willful roadblock as opposed to, you know, an ability roadblock, then maybe it's our responsibility to remove them, you know, or fix the problem, whatever it is, so that we can continue to contribute. So when the responsibility comes, we need to react to it and not let it pass us by and put it on the back shelf.
Joel Smith is who you're hearing. We're talking about workplace culture. Yeah, we really are talking about workplace culture. These are the things that change the environment that you work in. Mm-hmm. Not just necessarily, you know, casual Fridays or free donut Tuesdays or whatever it is that you have at your workplace, but not those parties. Those things help with morale sometimes. They can be fun to make the workplace kind of fun. But these are the things that make work successful, that make it enjoyable, that really make the work day all that it could be when we have commitment and buy-in to the work, to the project, to the task, or to the company, and then when we're making some effort, when we're really contributing to the whole. And you were talking about the weakest link, and I don't know, did we exhaust that, or is there other things in that we need to address?
Oh, we could talk about that forever, but yeah, okay. I think the key is that we need to be aware of it. We need to be aware of what the weakest link is and deal with it.
Yeah.
Whether it means just putting more effort into that weakest link, more resources into it to raise it up, or if it's more of a problem, then we need to remove it.
Yeah. And that can be difficult in and of itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be able to say we're going to remove this weakest link, and sometimes that might be something in your project list or in your task list that needs to be removed too,
right?
I mean, it doesn't necessarily always a person. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and these all come from the commitment level. You know, as a leader, if you're committed to having the best staff that you can have, and you have a weak link in there, but maybe you really like them, you're still committed to having the best staff, regardless of your feelings about how you like people. And so sometimes your commitment is what drives you to make the best decisions.
Right.
You know, and if you're not committed to having the best staff, you might compromise and leave that weakest link there. In fact, you might leave lots of weak links there, and you might have a weak crew just simply because you're not committed to having an excellent crew.
You know, and I didn't write this down, but you talked about with commitment too, that you're going to be committed to the thing that you're the most committed to. I mean, you're going to make the effort to the thing you're most committed to.
Yep.
And maybe we could talk about that a little bit too, the difference between saying that we're committed to something and actually being committed to something. I mean, there's a bit of difference, and contribution and effort is where that really starts to to take off. We're also going to talk about competence and ability with Joel Smith here on the Truth Business Network as we discuss workplace culture. Roloff with you here in the studio at the Truth Business Network radio program here on 99.3 FM. The Truth Business Network is a movement of Christian business professionals who recognize our need for God and for each other as we are equipped to be great leaders here in Central Iowa and live out our faith with confidence. And we're talking about workplace culture today with Joel Smith, who is a John Maxwell business coach. He is a good friend as well and a part of the Truth Business Network. And you've been a part of our group for a long time. And you really have a passion for investing in people. And you love seeing change come in the lives of individuals that you're around. That's something that you are passionate about. And one of the things I like about you, Joel, just you didn't even know I was going to say this. One of the things that I like about you is that you're unassuming about it. You know, sometimes you meet business coaches or like leadership development people, and they're like all suit and tie and big loud and, hey, Bafo Lenny, Sacco Lenny, and they're that kind of people, you know, and you're really kind of unassuming, but you have a wealth of knowledge. You've thought this stuff through. You're organized and detailed and focused, and because you're committed.
Sure.
You're committed to seeing change in people. You put in the time, you make the effort, you make the contributions to people. And when that is going on in you and you're doing that around other people, it changes the culture around you. You become create waves in the pool. And you're doing that, Joel, and you're teaching us how to do that because I believe, just like you do, that leadership is not something that is just a top-down thing. John Maxwell talked about that, you know, leading up, I believe, a 360-degree leader, right? And that is that leadership is not someone else's role.
Right.
A lot of times we hear that. You know, we hear, well, if you're the leader, you have the ability to be a leader. That's something that any individual can be, wherever they are in their organization. We want to be careful that we don't pretend we're something that we're not, because that's just going to frustrate you.
Right.
Don't pretend that you're not the leader that you are. Recognize where you are in the company or in the job, but you can lead from that place. And today, Joel, with your help, we're talking about workplace culture from that angle. We looked at commitment, which is just being really bought in, having focus, commitment to the vision of the company or of the project. Then contribution, that means making the effort and being efficient and putting aside the things that are not essential, but really working hard on those things that are going to get us the results we want. And then the last C is competence that you pointed out, and that is, do we really have the ability to do the thing that needs to get done, right?
Right. Yeah, see, we can't give away what we don't have. And so if we're going to help the people around us, from a leadership perspective, we're going to help the people around us grow and become more competent themselves, we have to become more competent first. That's where leadership comes in. Every great leader gets to a place before they help other people try to get to that same place.
Right.
You can't, you know, it's part of the leadership lid. John Maxwell talks about the leadership lid. It's one of the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. He basically says, hey, if you're a six, if your leadership level is at a six, you're not going to have anything more than fives working under you. And so if you want to have sixes and sevens working for you, you need to raise yourself up to an eight. And that's really important. The only way you can do that is to increase your own competence. What I mean by competence is your abilities. So, you know, we talked about the commitment level at the beginning, and then we talked about contribution, which was effort. So now we're talking about ability. So by raising your ability to do something, it makes you more effective in everything that you do. Like, for instance, you know, everybody has a different level of competence, and that level of competence ideally should be growing as you move on into your career. And there was a time when I had one store. I have 8 stores now. There was a time when I had 1 store, and I was really overwhelmed. I mean, I was really overwhelmed by it, and just, you know, owning and running, operating this 1 store seemed to be overwhelming to me. It was in the first few months, and I just, my confidence level was a lot lower then. And then it came about that I had 2 stores or 3 stores, and then my competence caught up to the number of stores. My competence caught up to the situation. Then I was able to run 3 stores. And so now I'm at a place where I have 8 stores, and my competence has grown to that. I'm not in the same place I was when I could run 1 store. If I were, I'd be even more overwhelmed. And so, but we all do this as we advance in the workplace, or we take on different jobs or responsibilities, or even in school. You know, when you're in 7th grade, your competence, you know, in any given subject is at a certain level. But then when you're in 9th grade or 12th grade, that competence has grown, and now you're capable of so much more. And so that's important in the workplace for all of us to focus on competence. And we need to work to increase our competence, you know, every day. And we do that by modifying and changing the actions that we take every day in order to do that.
You know, absolutely. And I think, you know, as I'm listening to you talk about this, Joel, we're talking about workplace culture in a way that maybe isn't what you think of immediately. A lot of times we hear of workplace culture and we think about pool tables in the break room, or we think about casual Fridays, or free donuts and that kind of thing. And those are nice little morale boosters, maybe. But what we're talking about is real work culture, really how we think about the culture of work.
Right, right. Growing.
Growing. And this is a worldview. And you talked about the 3 C's, the commitment, the contribution, and now we're talking about that competence. And it sounds like to me there, that means that we've got to carve out some time for us as individuals to learn how to do the thing that we know we have to do. If I'm committed to something and I'm making the effort, am I investing time in being good at it?
Right. And we have to just think differently in general. Yeah. A lot of times we think when we're in a job and we're doing a task day after day after day, we believe that, well, 6 months from now, I should get a raise because I put in my time. You know, or a year from now, or when I get an evaluation, I give. You know, I've had employees, you know, regular employees or people in management, whatever it is, come and say, hey, can I get a raise? That's the wrong question. The wrong question is, can I get a raise? The right question would be, hey, what do I need to do in order to make myself more valuable to your company so that I can be paid more? Right. That's the best way to look at it. And if that's the case, then there's all kinds of things we can do to raise our competence, raise the level of our abilities. And people in, you know, just about any workplace can raise their value that they bring to their company just by focusing on their own competence. And I mean, what does that look like? Well, maybe it might be really learning more about the company and what the company is about. Maybe it might be learning more about their specific tasks or skills, or maybe it's learning leadership and reading books or taking seminars or listening to great radio programs, you know, whatever it might be, or hanging out with Chris Roloff.
Sure.
But building your competence is work. It takes work to do that.
It does, yeah.
But it also rewards just as much, because the more competence you have, the more you're capable of doing, the more you can do. And so if your mindset is to make a difference, kind of like what we were talking about at the very beginning with the vision quest, you know,
right.
if we're part of the vision and we raise our competence, we can make more of a difference.
Right.
We can just be bigger and better at what we do.
Right.
And make a bigger difference and spread that to more people. And that spiral can spiral uphill.
Yeah, and each part of this, these 3 points require work and effort.
Yeah,
and I think that for me, at the end of, as we're getting closer to the end of the broadcast today, you know, or at least our time with you, Joel, and that is that all of this requires effort. You know, towards the beginning of the broadcast, we talked about Thomas Edison, and we hear him all the time referenced as, you know, how many times it took him to create the light bulb that we're all so thankful for now. But really, the thing that drove him was the commitment. He made the effort. He contributed to it, and he was competent. He continued to learn, and it didn't happen overnight. And all of those things, all of those 3 C's of real work culture, produced the results that he was looking for, the results that he was wanting. And it starts with having a goal. I mean, we have to know where we're going. We're rowing in a particular direction. We're doing all those things. And I don't know, as we kind of leave this, I would encourage myself, as I would hope to encourage you too today, you know, if this is stuff that you've heard a million times before, maybe today is the time that you go, you know what, though? I'm just actually going to try to do this. I'm going to be committed to the task. I'm going to make the effort, and I'm going to get better at doing it if I don't know how to do it. You know, get more competent. That's okay. You can do that. Just take a little step. Thanks, Joel, for being on the Truth Business Network with us today.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron. Coming up next, Carl Schaphorst, iowasalestraining.net. It's that time again here on the Truth Business Network radio program where Carl Schaphorst joins us in studio, iowatraining.com. He is with Sandler Training, and we're talking to sales folks like me who want to get better. We want to be sales professionals. We want to be professional salespeople. And in our field, do you believe that price is the main reason people buy? Why don't you text us your answer? Do you believe price is the main reason why people buy? Text us the answer at 515-727-5842. Carl, what do you think? Is price really the main reason that prospects buy?
You know, a lot of prospects certainly make us believe that price is the reason. I remember I was doing a training down in Kansas City for a bunch of heavy machinery salespeople, and I was telling them that people don't buy on price, and I swear to you, they all would have wanted to haul me out of the hallway and string me up. I mean, it was they really believed that price was kind of the big differentiator, and I don't believe that's the case. I really believe value is always the reason people buy. What I mean by that is that prospects, when they make their decision, and again, this goes back to science, it goes to neuroscience. You know, if you look at how human behaviors are driven, the limbic system of the brain is what drives all the emotions, and that's the part that also drives decision making and behavior. And so, if we are able to make a connection with the people we're trying to sell to at an emotional level, I'm going to tell you something. They won't forget you. And second, they will be inspired to buy you, and they will see you really as the only solution on the market. It's not like you're a commodity anymore. What they will see is that this really delivers a solution that makes them feel that they are going to be better off, and they will pay margin. They will pay a higher price for that, and that's how successful salespeople are able to sell into businesses where others will struggle, and they'll do it at margins that no one else can achieve because they know how to make that connection, not on an intellectual level. When you think about features and benefits of your product, that's right. An intellectual dialogue. And everybody says they're good at this and good at that. And our prospects actually are kind of tired of hearing all those things. But if you can really understand emotionally what drives them, like you know, our business is struggling. If we don't address this particular issue, we may have to close. We may have to lay people off. My weekends will be lost because I'll have to be here working. If you provide solutions that bring back the business owner's weekends, that help them to make their business solvent, to help grow and allow them to accomplish things that mean a lot to them personally, emotionally. Those solutions will trump price any day.
Well, you said two things there. Carl Schaphorst is our guest, and you can learn more and get trained to be a sales professional at iowasalestraining.net. But Carl, you said two words there, and you highlighted them vocally. You said you would inspire people to buy when they feel like what you have will benefit them. Those are emotion words.
Yeah, they are. You know, a lot of people think sales is about pushing product and moving services. And that's what I believed when I was selling heating and air conditioning for 20 years. I really believe that. But when I was a client of Sandler and now I've been training it for a while, I realized that, you know what these prospects buy is they're not buying products. They're buying feelings. They want to feel like they've done something good. They want to feel like they've paved the way to the next level. They want to feel that they've done something that will make a difference. And certainly they'll use their intellect to justify the price and justify terms and conditions, and which is all fine. But the actual energy behind the decision to buy comes from their emotions. The professional salesperson knows that and knows how to ask the right questions to make that connection.
Get the training you need to become a professional salesperson. Go to iowasalestraining.net. iowasalestraining.net. Thanks again, Carl.